You guys can have a seat. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Pastor Dave. We want to welcome you and thank you for coming. If you are new, you guys came at a great Sunday because we're starting a brand new series this morning that I'm very, very excited about. We're calling it Moving In, and we're really going to answer this question, how to neighbor your neighborhood. Now, to explain what we mean by neighborhood, we got to do that first before we get into our passage this morning. A neighborhood is basically what we're calling any place where you live, work, and play, or where you maybe even go to school, or just where you regularly spend your time, wherever people know, at least not maybe your name, but your face, your spheres of influence. That's what we're going to be calling our neighborhoods for this series. And there's a phenomenon that happens when it comes to our neighborhoods, that at least I've noticed that happens with me, is that we can get so familiar with our surroundings and the people that we work with and, you know, play sports with and all those things that we begin to kind of just, in a sense, take them for granted and just kind of, they kind of blur into the background. I say it this way, that which is regularly seen can eventually become regularly overlooked. It's a little bit like if I would go to your house today, those spots on the wall, those little marks, those little dents on the wall that you walk by every single day, you know, you see them, but you don't see them. You just kind of got used to them. And I would just start pointing them out and, you know, hey, what about this mark? Or what about this mark? You're like, oh yeah, that, you know, kind of thing. But if you paint your walls, like fresh paint of walls, you know, and there's a mark, you see that right away and that bothers you. Some of these walls that I painted in this church recently, I see a mark and it's like bothers me all the time because it's new, it's fresh. But those things kind of blur into the background over the years. I got marks on my walls that they don't bother me at all because they've been there for 3, 4, 5 years now. And I have 4 boys and I just have marks on my walls. So it's kind of like that in the sense of when you go, oh, that's just, you know, when you think about your neighborhoods, well, that's just Jeff, or that's just Bob, that's just Cindy, you know, our admin assistant, or, you know, you just kind of overlook them in the sense of that's just who they are, that's just what they do, this is just normal, and you don't really go any further with that, then yeah, I see them, but I don't really see them. But here's why we're doing this series, and here's why this is so important. If we aren't reaching those next to us, then we can't expect to reach those far from us. And if you're a Jesus follower, like if you're not a Jesus follower, we're so glad that you're here, and we're just going to, you know, just encourage you to sit back and listen in. But if you're a Jesus follower, we really take his words seriously. Because when you come back from the dead, when you predict your death and resurrection and kind of pull it off, we take your words seriously. So his words to us before he left was go and make disciples of what? All nations, right? And so if we're going to reach those far from us, how in the world are we ever going to do that if we can't even reach those next to us or near to us? And so I think our best chance of reaching the nations, as Jesus called us to do, is by reaching our neighborhoods, by reaching those that God has placed right in front of us, that we see every single day, even though many of us have probably overlooked many of them. And when we talk about the nations, when we talk about the world, it's so easy to kind of get overwhelmed, because if you watch the news for about 5 seconds, you just see all of this gloom and doom and just how messy and messed up this world is. And I think even if you're not a Jesus follower this morning, I think we would all agree this world is a broken place. We may not agree on the solution to the brokenness, but all of us would say, it is just broken. How are we ever going to put Humpty Dumpty back together again? How are we ever going to fix these messes? And the reality is, you know, as much as, you know, our third grade teachers told us that we can make a difference of the whole world and impact the whole world, most of us aren't going to impact the whole world, right? I mean, you know, I'm almost 40 years old now. I'm not going to impact the whole world, probably not. But I can make a difference in my neighborhoods, right? I may impact the whole world in a sense over time and through other people, but, you know, just me, I can impact my neighborhood. I can impact my workplace and pray for those who are my coworkers. That's a joke, because I work at a church, so never mind. It's all right. But I can, you know, I can impact people who are near to me, right? Who I play golf with. I can impact them. I have a hard time if I think I got to impact this whole world, I got to reach the nations. That's just overwhelming. I just want to call it quits and go home and, you know, put the TV on. But if it's just my neighbors, if it's just those people that are near to me, that's doable in a sense, way more than reaching the nations. So I think our best chance, though, of reaching the nations and actually doing something that makes an impact is starting with our neighborhood. So that's why we're going to do this series. And so in order to do this well, in order to neighbor our neighborhoods well, and we're going to talk about what neighboring means in a second, I think we need six essentials to come with us as we move into our neighborhoods. And I'm going to give you all six up front, and then we're going to talk about each of these individually every sermon for here on out for the next few weeks. But here's the six essentials. We need a heart change, and we're going to talk about that this morning. We're going to talk about what it means to have a different kind of vision and seeing the world differently, seeing ourselves differently, seeing the world through God's lenses. That's a totally different game changer if you're able to do that. We're going to talk about having a strategy, because we're not just going to fall into this, because chances are if you're not doing this now, you're not going to be doing this unintentionally later on. You're just not going to accidentally wake up and be reaching your neighbors. It's just not going to happen. We need a strategy. In fact, this week that we're going to talk about that, we're inviting Kent and Jill, who work in this field as experts, and they're going to come up, and I'm going to do some Q&A with them, and they're going to do a workshop afterwards. So it's going to be a really good Sunday for that. We're going to talk about courage, because I know I'm talking to a lot of introverts in this room, right? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand as if you're an introvert, because you wouldn't anyways, but that's all right. This is scary stuff, talking about making new relationships and getting involved in people's lives. That's risky. That's scary. So we're going to talk about what it means to have courage and where does that come from. We're going to talk about time, everyone's favorite topic, right? And I know everyone's busy and all that stuff, but we're going to talk about what it means to make ourselves available and make better use of our time. And then we're going to talk about having a story, because we all have a story to tell if we're willing to share it. So those are the six essentials, but I want to talk about heart this morning to kind of kick off this series. And by heart, I simply mean this idea of really, compassion more than anything else. Do we care? And that's the kind of the question that I want to throw at you this morning. In compassion, when it comes to compassion, I find that our empathy always out-compassions our sympathy. Empathy means that, and I hope you know what empathy means, but if you don't, it means that you can actually relate to somebody, that you kind of walked a mile in their shoes in a sense, that it's not just, I care about you, but I care about you and I know how you feel because I have felt that similar too. We may have different stories, but I know what that's like. And we just naturally gravitate towards people who are more like us in those ways. Like if you've ever been divorced, and you hear about someone else talking about their divorce or going through a divorce, you know your heart kind of gravitates towards them. Even if you may not know them, it's like, I know how that feels. I know the pain. I know just the frustrations. I know what that's like. And you just move in their direction way more than anything that, with those of us who've never been divorced. Or if you've gone through cancer, if you've gone through chemo treatments, and you hear about someone else going through a chemo treatment, you know what that's like. You know the pain, the life changes that occur, and your just heart goes out to them, right? If you hear about someone being a Bengals fan, and if you're a Browns fan, you're like, I know what that's like, guys. I've been there 0-4. I know. And your heart kind of goes out, So you just kind of gravitate more to those when you can empathize with them. And so empathy is incredibly powerful. Empathy will always outlast, outrun, out-compassion sympathy. And I'm not saying sympathy is bad necessarily, but I'm just saying we need to have empathy if we can. And we're going to talk about how to have that this morning. Now, when we talk about compassion, can I challenge you a little bit this morning on how compassionate you may think you are? I know some of you may say, and some of you maybe are, just extraordinarily compassionate and caring about people. But if I'm honest with myself this morning, I would say I am less compassionate than I like to admit to other people. Like, I don't care about people as much as maybe, I should, or other people maybe think I should. I have a hard time with that. Anybody else have a hard time caring about other people? Just me. That's great. That's all right. But, and if you're saying to yourself, Dave, I am compassionate, and how dare you, challenge me on that, that's okay. In fact, you're in good company, and I just want you to leave that thought right there, because Jesus actually talks to somebody, and he has that person right where I have you, and he says something to them. So I just want you to hold on to that thought and turn with me to Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 25. And if you're turning there, if you have your Bibles, Luke is one of the four gospel accounts of the life of Jesus. By gospel, it means the story of Jesus and what he's done and who he is. And there's four accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Luke, if you've never read Luke, go home and read Luke. But the first 9-10 chapters of Luke are really all about the person of Jesus. And then the next 9 chapters or 10 chapters are really all about what it means to follow Jesus, because Jesus invites us to follow him, to do what he does, to listen and obey. And so the chapter 10 is about what it means to be a follower of Jesus in two unique ways. The beginning of chapter 10 is when Jesus sends out his disciples or followers, and basically says to be a follower is not just to follow, but it also means that you are a messenger, that you carry with you what we call the gospel, the story of what God has done in order to rescue this world. And so he sends them out as messengers, gospel messengers. But the second half of chapter 10, he does something different. He says it's not just about messaging the gospel. He says it's about, and he uses this word, as we're going to see, neighboring the gospel. It's living it out. It's not just talking about it. And so if you're not a Jesus follower, maybe this is one of your critiques about Christians, is they talk a good game, but they don't really live it out so well. And if that, you know, if that's been your experience, I apologize, because that's not what Jesus has called us to do. It's as much as neighboring as it is messaging. So here's the background, but here's how it starts this conversation off. Luke says this: on one occasion, an expert in the law, which is, by the way, not like a lawyer in today's term. Some of us, when we read that an expert in the law, think of a civil lawyer. He was not so much as like a civil lawyer as much as someone who knew the religious, the Jewish law, more like a seminary professor who studied the law, who memorized the law. And so on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up, and it says, to test Jesus or to trick Jesus or to trap Jesus. And the reason that he wanted to test Jesus was because Jesus was hanging out with sinners, that quote-unquote sinners, that had basically abandoned the law. And he would invite them and befriend them and walk with them and hang out with them and eat with them. And so they were just upset by this. And so it's like, Jesus, what do you think of this law if you're hanging out with all these people who have dismissed the law? And so he's wanting to test Jesus to see how he would respond to this question. He said, teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Like, what are God's standards? Like, what is it that do I need to do? What is his requirements to get into heaven? And I think what the reason that he's asking this question is that he's hoping Jesus would respond the way he maybe thinks Jesus would respond. And that is, well, you don't have to, you know, do anything. You don't have to follow the law. You don't have to do any of this. Just God loves you and come follow me, right? But this is not how actually Jesus answers the question. He actually answers the question, frustratingly enough, with a question. Don't you hate it when people do that? You're supposed to give me a question, but never mind. All right, so what is written in the law, he replies. What is written in the law? Like, how do you read it? Jesus said, what is written in the law? I mean, we just are told, and Luke tells us that you're an expert in the law. How do you read it? Like, how would you summarize it? Now, in fact, there's two different ways this guy could have answered this question. He could have said, you know, well, what does the law say? Well, I can tell you what the law says. And he could have maybe, because some guys could have done this, told them all 613 laws of the Old Testament. But I think what Jesus is asking, what this guy answers correctly, is the summation of the law. How do you summarize the law? How do you read the law in its, you know, as a summary? And here's how he answers. He answered this way: love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all of your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I don't think this guy actually came up with this idea of summarizing the law this way. This is actually something that was probably pretty normal in that time period, to summarize this statement or these two laws together. In fact, if you look at the first 10 commandments, the first few of the 10 commandments is all about loving God, and the rest of the 10 commandments are all about loving people. So this was kind of a natural way of summarizing the Old Testament law, all 613 commands condensed into this summary statement. And so Jesus hears this, and he says this: you have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Good job, expert in the law. You did a good job. In fact, you answered the way I would answer. In fact, you've answered the way that I've already answered. And maybe that's why the expert in the law answered the way he did, because maybe he already heard Jesus give this answer before, because he had. This is how I would summarize the law. These are the two most important commandments. Love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and love people. But Jesus says something next that I think really rocked the expert of the law to his core. Because here's what he says. He says, Do this and you will live. Now think about what he's saying here. He says, do this. Well, what's this? He's saying, do the whole love God with all of your heart, with all of your being, with everything that you have. Make God your center of your life perfectly. That's what all means, right? All, everything about you. You need to love God with everything that you have, and you need to love other people just as much with the same amount of passion and conviction and energy and time, you know, as you do, you love yourself. I mean, he says, do this. And it's like, wow. And what is Jesus saying here? What is, you know, he's saying, here's what God requires of you. That this is God's standard, that you need to love God perfectly, right? You need to love God perfectly. And you need to love others just as you would love yourself. That's a fair thing to do. And this is huge. And why Jesus is saying this and why he's so brilliant, because he's saying, listen, on the one hand, the law is right. The law is good. The law is right. This is how you ought to live. But on the other hand, he's saying, the law is a way of life, but it's never a way to life because it's just too much. It's just too high. I mean, if you think about it, no one loves God with all of their being all of the time. And certainly no one loves other people with the same kind of affection and intensity and conviction as they love themselves all of the time. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that is so hard to, it's impossible for us. And he's saying, do this and you will live. And it's like, really? That's all I have to do? You know? Come on, Jesus, really? And I think what Jesus is saying is, do this and you will live, but good luck trying to do this perfectly, right? And this weight, and you can just see the expert law just face, just, you know, go down and the weight of this law and realizing how far short. Because here's the deal, we can feel good about ourselves when we compare ourselves to other people who aren't that loving and who aren't that kind. But when you put yourselves compared to the law of God, of here's his standards and his requirements, suddenly that weight is crushing. It's absolutely crushing. And we know what the expert of law is thinking. He's thinking, there's no way I can do this. And so there's no way. And he begins to understand what Jesus is saying. And we know that he understands it because of what he says next. He says this, but he wanted to justify himself. Why would anyone need to feel the need to justify themselves unless they feel what? Guilty. Unless you feel shame, unless you feel like something, how you completely invalidated the thing that I'm standing on. Now I got to justify myself. Now I got to explain myself. Now I got to somehow figure out what I need to do with this. And so he says to justify himself, he asked Jesus this question, this, you know, one of the most popular questions ever in the Bible. And who, Jesus, because, okay, let's get down to it. Who is my neighbor? If loving my neighbor is so important, then who is my neighbor? Jesus, let's get down to brass tacks here. Really, and what he's doing is trying to get to the bare min of what it means to love others well. He's looking for the just how low can we go principle. What is the lowest standard of neighborly love that I have to do in order to get in good with God? Like, Jesus, come on, let's be practical. Let's be reasonable. What's the doable amount of loving my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? And perhaps the expert law was hoping that Jesus would answer the way he was thinking at this time, because most Jewish people in this time, when you would say love your neighbor as yourself, thought in very clear terms of who their neighbor was. Because where this law came from, this law actually comes from the Leviticus. If you go back into Leviticus, the Old Testament book, it has the law right there. And here's what it says. It says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people. And you maybe have used this term before. This is a kind of common term. Like, it's, hey, you're my people. Anybody ever say that? That's my people. You're my people. That's not my people. That's my people kind of thing. Maybe this is where it came from. But this is the idea of, like, who is your people? You know, whoever your people are, do not bear a grudge against them. Well, who are your people? Well, the author of Leviticus tells us the next statement, who your people are. He says this, and this is where the law comes from. So it's, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but he says, love your neighbor as yourself. So who are your people? Your neighbor. So Jews thought of, okay, well, my neighbor are my people. And who are my people? Well, my people are those who look like me, who dress like me, who think like me, who believe what I believe, who talk the way I talk, and all that thing. They thought in ethnic terms, they thought nationalistic terms, religious terms. That's who my people are. That's who my neighbors are. And it's only fair to love people who are like me the way they, you know, love them the way I love myself, because that just seems right and good. And so, you know, the expert laws thing, you know, who's my neighbor? Clearly, Jesus, you think it's my people, your people, our people. But the question is still hanging out there. Who is my neighbor, Jesus? Who is my neighbor? And Jesus so brilliantly tells us a parable or a story that really has just, I think, changed the landscape, changed the game. So he says, who's my neighbor? And in reply, Jesus said this. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. And you can just picture the expert law going, whoa, no, Jesus, here's the problem. You do this kind of thing. I asked you a very clear question. I don't think I could be any clearer, you know, than my question. Who is my neighbor? And now you're going to story time, Jesus. We've heard about this. We just want you to answer the question. Stop giving us stories. And Jesus is like, just wait a second. And in reply, he says, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. Now, if you've ever been to Israel, you know that Jerusalem sits up on a high mountain range, and Jericho is about 17 miles down from that, about a 3,600 elevation drop, 3,600 feet drop in elevation. The road is windy, it is narrow. I've driven this road from Jericho up to Jerusalem, and it is kind of dangerous. And so you can imagine back in that day, it was extremely dangerous. It was extremely difficult to get up, you know, and be safe on. Now, it's not only that, but there was also, this was just known as, by up to about the 5th or 6th century, known as the Bloody Way or the Red Way. People would get jumped on this road. It was a pretty dangerous road. It's like talking about a guy traveling through Skid Row at night, you know, alone at 2 a.m. You know, you just kind of picture this. This is dangerous. This is, you know, this is hard. Actually, up until the 19th century, people paid sheikhs money for safety to travel to this road up to Jerusalem or down to Jericho. So he says a man was attacked by there, and everybody's thinking, well, yeah, that's you don't travel around, you know, that alone. But he goes on. He says, and then they stripped him of his clothes, which were very, very valuable. If you're going to beat somebody or rob them or kill them, you didn't just take their wallet. You took their clothes because clothes were extraordinarily expensive back in that time. And they beat him and they went away, leaving him half dead. Now, here's the interesting part. How many of you have heard the story before? Just about every single one of you. So I can just pray and we can go now, right? Okay, let's pray. Right, this is the amazing thing about this story. This is not just a parable. It is an idiom even that we use today. It is a way of that we talk today. This is a common expression, the Good Samaritan story. In fact, I've read headlines last night about how a Good Samaritan saved this, you know, person, or this Good Samaritan saved a puppy. We use it in our vernacular. It is so common. Most of us, even if we didn't grow up going to church, even if we'd never read the Bible, we've heard of this story, or at least we've heard of this expression, Good Samaritan. And I think this is so powerful. Just stop and think about this. Here's Jesus 2,000 years ago, having a single conversation with a guy and maybe some crowds around, some disciples around. And here we are still talking about this story today. And when I say Good Samaritan story, you know what I'm talking about. I think that is amazing. I think that has power right there. But if we just did this story, like I don't even have to tell you how it ends, you know how it ends. But if we just did this story, this would just change, I think, not just our communities, our neighbors, our neighborhoods. I think this would change our culture, our nations. If we just all put this, what he'd said, into practice, whether you're Jesus' follower or not, I think this is just good stuff. I think this is amazing. But Jesus, as you know the story, he goes on to share about two men that saw this guy half dead on the side of the road. There was a priest and a Levite, and it sounds like a start of a joke, but it's not. A priest and a Levite both travel by this man, and Luke tells us they both see this guy, and they do nothing. And the reason that Jesus uses a priest and a Levite is because these two roles in the Jewish world and the Jewish, you know, sacramental system and all that, they were the ones that actually to pass out alms to the poor. So if anyone was kind of supposed to or had the duty to stop and help this guy, it would have been a priest or a Levite, but they don't. Why not? We don't know, but we can guess. And our best guess is it's probably the same reasons why we don't stop and help, why we kind of talk ourselves out of stopping, or why we don't get engaged, why we don't, you know, jump into the messes of other people's lives, right? Because we don't either, because we talk ourselves out of it all the time. I know I do. In fact, I'll tell you a story that makes me look really bad, but I'm going to do it because I love you guys, and I want to make a point. A few weeks ago, I'm driving on Wilmington Dayton Road, up Wilmington Pike, actually, Wilmington Pike, up by, you know, the shopping centers like Lowe's and just before Clio, so there's Lowe's and there's restaurants and all there, up there. So I'm driving, and I stop at this light, and two cars come up to me, you know, on the side in the other lane. There was a Mercedes and a newer, like, Ford or something. The woman of the Ford, when it stops, she gets out of her car, runs up to the Mercedes, starts yelling, and then begins swinging at her inside her car. I'm going, what am I seeing here? I thought this was Centerville. Then I looked at the sign. I was like, oh, this is Bellbrook. This makes sense. Bellbrook. Still in Bellbrook. But I love Bellbrook. Go on. And so this woman in the Mercedes starts swinging back at her and, you know, yelling. And I have no idea what has taken place prior to this. All I'm seeing is these women just start swinging at each other. Well, the woman in the Mercedes just says, enough of this. And she just starts driving away, you know. And so the woman in the Ford just runs back to her car. And I saw her license plate and it said Rolex. Okay. So just a tip for anyone who's going to commit a crime. Don't have a license plate so easily rememberable as Rolex, okay? Because that's not going to help you. So I watch these two, and she turns into the restaurant area, and this woman follows her. And I'm already late for my meeting, and I'm going, what do I do? I'll just go to my meeting. So I just go to my meeting, and I stop, and I call the police at the meeting because it was just up the road. It was just a few minutes away. And so I'm with other pastors, because that's what other pastors do when they're not preaching on Sunday. They just hang out together and eat. We only work one day a week. So I'm there, and I'm telling the story. I'm like, my heart was kind of racing. I'm like, wow, this, you know. So I call the police, first of all, and they said, oh, you're talking about this incident? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, we already know about it. It's, you know, we got to cover it. I'm like, okay. So I get there. I'm telling this story to the pastors, and one of the pastors said, well, didn't you stop and get out and help? And I was like, no. And I'm like, then I started coming up with, well, it was so fast, and it's on a road, you know. And I just started coming up with excuses after excuses, why I didn't stop and jump in to help break up this fight. Now, okay, I told you it was going to make me look bad, right? You're going, you're all judging me. I can see it in your eye, you know. That's okay. You wouldn't have stopped either. Maybe you would have. I don't know. But I didn't, and whatever. So, and I'm like, maybe I should have stopped. But my point is, listen, we can convince ourselves and talk ourselves out way more than we usually convince ourselves to talk ourselves into a situation like that. And here's the thing. I'm not asking us to jump into those kind of situations. That's not what we mean by neighboring our neighbors. Our neighbors aren't usually, you know, doing fist fights with each other. But come on, are we going to jump into people's lives or not? You know, we got to make this commitment up front. Are we going to do this or not? And what's so powerful about the story is here's a guy, and as these two guys walk by, I mean, sure, they could have come up with so many excuses, and I'm sure they did as far as, well, he probably deserved it. You know, I don't know what the lady did in the Mercedes to deserve what she got, and maybe she didn't do anything and she didn't deserve it, or maybe she did a lot of things before that moment. But you don't know. All you see is what you see, and you're kind of going, you know, should I help or should I not? And so they probably walked by and thought, well, you know, what would you have to do to get to this spot of being bloodied and all? I mean, you know, he's probably with the wrong crowd and all these kind of things. But then Jesus introduces us to the hero. And I think this is so brilliant. He uses, as we know, a Samaritan as the hero of the story. And if you aren't familiar with the story, if you don't know about Jews and Samaritans, Samaritans and Jews hate each other. Jews would walk around Samaria just not to be with Samaritans. They just had derogatory, they would use Samaritan as a derogatory name. In fact, if you read John 8 sometime, in John 8, Jesus angers the Jews so bad. And what do the Jewish people call Jesus? They call him a Samaritan and demon-possessed. Why would they do that? Because in that culture, that was such a derogatory term. They would pray. Jews would pray. They would wake up and say, God, would you give me this or that? You know, the normal prayers. But some would also pray, and God, I pray that no Samaritan would be raised on the last day. That's how much they hated Samaritans. And here's Jesus using the Samaritan in the story. It is absolutely brilliant. And he says, but a Samaritan. And everybody went, ugh, you know. As he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. Now, why did he have pity or why did he have compassion? We don't know, but we can guess. I mean, I think it was Jesus inviting us to kind of, you know, fill in the gaps here. Here's the Samaritan who knew what it was like to be overlooked. He knew what it was like to be ignored, to be mistreated. He knew all that. I mean, that's how Jews treated Samaritans all of the time. And here he was, and suddenly his heart went out to this man who was being overlooked, who had been mistreated, who's left for dead. And so he went to him, and Jesus is telling this story to this crowd, and he went to him, and he bandaged his wounds, poured oil and wine, and then he put the man on his donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And people are going, what a Samaritan. Samaritans would never do that, you know, and they're just mind is being blown as far as what Samaritans were capable of doing. And it says the next day, and Jesus is kind of like pouring this on, and people are going, the next day, you mean this guy, you know, stood the night with him and cared for him, stayed the night all night long with him? And Jesus is like, yeah, the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. He basically says, here's a blank check. I don't know how much this man is going to require or what the cost is going to be, but I will pay it all. And everyone's going, are you kidding me? And Jesus is pouring this on and on and on. And it's just incredible. And so people are hearing this story. And I think this is such a brilliant story because here Jesus begins to, I think, redefine for us what it means to be neighborly. It redefines for us what it means to who is our neighbor, what is our neighborhood, and what it means to be neighborly to somebody. Then he says this. He says, and asks the question, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? And this poor expert of the law who was trying to trap Jesus, now he himself is completely trapped. I mean, there's only one answer. Everybody knows the answer. But this guy couldn't even say the word Samaritan. So you can just kind of picture this man kind of muddling through. The expert of the law replied, the one who had mercy on him, I guess. You know, Jesus is like, what? The one who had mercy on him. The one who showed compassion. The one who took the time and, you know, did what he did. The one who had mercy on him. Okay, Jesus, you know, the Samaritan guy. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. You want to know what it means to love your neighbor as yourself? It's right there. Go and do likewise. And again, the brilliancy of this is that he makes the Samaritan the hero of the story, and he puts the expert in the law of the law on the ground, bloodied and left for dead. I mean, that's the story, the expert of the law. Because we always, when we watch a story, we watch a movie, aren't we always trying to identify with the hero? At least I do. Every time I watch a Marvel movie, I'm walking away acting like that Marvel hero. I'm Spider-Man, I'm Thor for the next few hours. You know, that's just what I do. But this guy could not put himself in the shoes of the Samaritan. There was no way. And so he clearly saw himself as the man who was on the ground, bloodied and left for dead. That's what Jesus' point was. He says, I want you to identify with that guy. Now, the question is, can you identify with the man who's left for dead? Can you identify with? See, this is where this idea of compassion comes from and how we can get empathy. Because see, remember, our empathy always out-compassions our sympathy. And so I think what Jesus is trying to do for us is to help us to see that's who we are, or that's who we were, that's where we started. We were dead or half-dead, laying on the side of the road, nothing to offer. Sin has beaten us so bad up, and we were helpless until our good Samaritan came to the rescue. And Jesus, in a sense, neighbors us. But we have to get to the point where first we say, you know what? I have nothing to offer. This whole idea of loving God with all of my heart, with all of myself, and loving my neighbor as myself, I have failed miserably on that. In fact, I say it this way, until you are crushed by the love that God requires, this is a standard, you will never be humble enough to receive the love that God offers. Until you see yourself helpless on the side of the road, what we're going to be talking about next for the next few weeks, it won't connect. It won't connect. But to the depth and the degree that you can see yourself as that man, I'm telling you, to the degree that you will be able to neighbor people well. In other words, you will never be able to really neighbor your neighborhood until you yourselves get neighbored. And so that's my first question as we start the series. Have you been neighbored by Jesus? Have you asked him to rescue you from just the sin and death that has beaten us all up so severely? Have you been rescued? Have you realized, God, I can't make my way back to you? That, if that's the law, if that's the standard, I'm helpless and hopeless unless a rescuer comes, a savior comes, a good Samaritan who could pay for my wounds to be healed, who could treat me and heal me the only way that God can. Have you been neighbored by Jesus? Here's another question. If you have, who do you regularly see that you have regularly overlooked in your neighborhoods? That's a question I had to wrestle with. Who do you just see and just go, oh, that's just so-and-so, and that's just how they are, and that's just they're just always gonna be like that, and that's just, you know, and excuse after excuse of why you don't engage more with them. Who do you regularly see that you regularly have overlooked? We've had neighbors, you know, I had to admit, I had neighbors for like 5 years, and I'm like, I don't even know like their names or the last names or what they do. And they live like two doors down from me. Shame on me, come on. I have overlooked them. Here's another question. If you say, you know, I do care, Dave, I do care. Okay, great. Then how would those in your neighborhood know you really care about them? Do they know that you care? Or is it the only person that knows that you care is you? How do they know? What are you doing? Let me give you just a couple of stories and we're going to wrap up. I can only use neighborhood stories because I'm not in sports and my coworkers are my coworkers here. So I got to use my neighborhood. So, but again, neighborhood's more than just neighbors. But my neighbor, Jeff, he was out washing his car one day, and my 3-year-old son, Ezra, always asked me to get on the electric scooter and drive him around our cul-de-sac up and down the road. So we're doing that. Jeff's kind of spraying his car, and he sees us going, and he knows that Ezra loves the hose and gets wet and stuff. So Jeff would stop what he was doing and start spraying up in the air every time we'd come around his driveway. And we were just starting to laugh and have fun and all those kind of things. And as I'm doing this, I begin to just have one of those Grinch moments where your heart kind of does this kind of thing, just grows a little bit more and more. And I'm looking at Jeff just differently. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh my goodness. I feel like I'm starting to care for this guy, like in ways I have not. Suddenly, I see something in him, and it's hard to explain, but it's like, I think I would do that if I was a neighbor with kids running around. I think I would have fun this way. And boy, he kind of is like a grandfather to my kids. He's, you know, he's really caring for my kids. Suddenly I start just emoting you know, and I don't emote very much, but suddenly it was just, wow. And I think this was God's way of kind of beginning to answer this prayer that I've been praying for my neighbors, like give me a heart for my neighbors. And I see this, and I just see a different side of Jeff, and I start caring for Jeff more. And now, yeah, I want to talk to Jeff. I'm looking for, you know, and it just has changed. And I don't know how else to explain it. And I think that's what something we have to begin. It has that process that we have to start caring for our neighbors. And so when I start caring for him more, I want to get more into his life. And I think Jeff kind of sees that. And one time him and I were out talking and he's just breaking down in tears. And he knows I'm a pastor. So he just said, hey, just want you to know, my wife Connie, she just got diagnosed with cancer. She's going to go and have surgery. And you could just tell it was just really heavy. It was a thyroid thing on her neck. And so, again, my natural self is going, okay, well, I'll pray about that, Jeff. And just what kind of walk away, you know? And do you guys ever say, I'm going to pray about it and not pray about it? I never do that, by the way. I try not to. But my boldness kicked in. Right? I'm like, no, wait, Dave, you got to be courageous here. You've never actually brought up God or stuff with him. You need to like pray with him right now. Do you ever have that kind of thing? Like you just, God's like, come on, man, you got to do that. So I get the boldness, I get the courage, and I say, Jeff, can I pray for you right now, actually? And he's just breaking down, and he said, I really appreciate that. So I pray for Jeff. And again, I'm just sharing my heart here. I walk away going, you know, I'm thinking about me more than him, I think. But I'm just like, wow, I did it. I prayed for him. Wow, go me. You know, I'm so loving. I prayed for this guy with him. And like 2 days later, I'm outside watching my kids. And this was after the surgery. I see basically the rest of our neighborhood carrying all kinds of food and stuff all together, except for like our house. I don't know how we did not get invited into this. All of them are like just swarming Jeff and Connie's house and just loving and hugging and just, you know, crying. And it was just they're like this whole thing. And I'm going, what you did, Dave, was like, you know, you thought you were so high. I think God was just humbling me right there. You thought you were so loving. The neighborhood who, you know, these aren't even Jesus followers, are loving this family way more than you are right now. And God just kind of just drop kicked me right there in the gut. I'm going, we got our work cut out for us. Listen, we do. This story, this Good Samaritan story, is popular. It's known. People know what it means to the neighbor, and they have sympathy, and they love. If we're going to love people the way Jesus loved us, we have our work cut out for us in this culture, because this culture has already been impacted with the gospel message, and they know what kind of love looks like. And you see what I'm saying? We got to step it up. I'm like, I got to step up my game. This is how people are going to know our love, if we love not just, I'll throw you a prayer here and there, but if we love sacrificially, unconditionally, if we go not just a mile, but miles with these people, we have to step up our game. I think unbelievers, non-Christians, the rest of the world sometimes just puts us to shame on how much they care for people. So do they know that you really care? That's why you really care. You really care. And so I'm going to just invite you to do what I've been doing over the last 8-9 months. I always want to do this in my own heart before I ever bring something up to you guys. I don't think that's fair for me to ask you to do something that I'm not working on as well. But just pray this simple prayer. I think God loves simple prayers like this. But just, God, please just give me a heart for my neighborhood. That's what I started praying. Just give me a heart for my neighborhood. Give me a heart for Jeff. Give me a heart for Ryan. Give me a heart for Scott. These guys I see almost every single day. Just give me a heart for them. I need to care more. Because if I don't care, the rest of the stuff that we're going to talk about, we just might as well just go home and just or do something else. Because if we don't care, the rest of the world, first of all, is going to recognize that and see that and go, you don't really care. You're doing this for some other reason. But if we don't really care, we're not going to have the kind of motivation needed, because duty isn't going to push us far enough. Responsibility isn't going to push us far enough. Shame or guilt because I should be doing this isn't going to push us far enough. The priest, Levite, they had those things and they kept on walking. I'm telling you, we need to have empathy. We need to see ourselves in them. They just don't have Jesus yet. Do we love them the way that Jesus has already loved . So just give me a heart. So I just want to pray that with us this morning as we kick off our series. And I hope that you continue to do that. And life group leaders, I hope that you ask this week in your life groups, hey, are you praying this? Where are you at with all this? I think this is so important if we're going to actually do what Jesus has called us to do. And not just reach the nations, but first reach our neighborhoods.